Sportsnet 590. 590. The Fan.
Morning show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The insiders are up early, grinding. Poor guys.
Aww.
Saw Jeff Merrick just had a tweet. Yeah, Jeff Merrick. He's getting a little piece of the action early. Headlines.
There's stuff happening. There's rumblings.
Merrick.
From my stomach.
Tweeting right now. Couple of things, actually. Couple of things. You got a little, couple of little spicy scoops. So just tune in, Kipper. Like, listen up tight.
Yeah, what's going on, Kipper?
Sounds like Brent Burns to Dallas has picked up steam. One to watch out for this morning. Another defenseman to watch is John Klingberg. Both Seattle and Detroit have had various levels of interest, but Carolina is probably in the best position to offer what he's looking for. Carolina has been around Klingberg at various times all season. That's a little surprising to me, given that, you know, they're kind of deep at their decor, and they might lose Trocheck, and they might be looking for forwards. I don't know. I was a little surprised about that. So, yeah, let's bring in Nick Kyprios. He of Real Kipper and Born, he of winning Stanley Cups, he of being an NHL insider. What's up, buddy? How are we doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I like today. I like today a lot. I like that I woke up this morning going, I wonder who the Leafs are going to sign. And then I see Elliot Sports like, maybe Dennis Malgin. I was like, back to bed. You know, I wasn't stoked on reading that.
No, I think people are still scratching their heads, wondering what's going on between the pipes, still trying to figure it all out. And it is a bit of a head scratcher on why they soured on Jack Campbell so much down the stretch, to the point where they didn't even make him an offer. And we know the game in his game in the back half of the season wasn't what it was in the first half. But if we would have told you at Christmas that the Leafs weren't even interested in making him an offer to re-sign him, you probably would have told us we're nuts back a few months ago. And yeah. Yet here we are, Matt Murray, and maybe shopping for a backup goalie.
So you're the guy to talk to about this, and I actually like was really looking forward to this part of this. So let's actually start here. So I get it from this standpoint, okay? Like, if you're telling me, hey, you can have a third-round pick and 2 years of Matt Murray – at 4.75 or 4.7, whatever he is. I think he's 4.68 actually. But you get him on 2 year term, you're rolling the dice, or you're gonna pay Jack Campbell for 5 years at $5 million. Which one would you rather do? I think that's a debate. I think that's an actual legitimate discussion based on even Jack's last year. Like, it was up and down. We all had a lot of question marks about Jack. You know, even throughout the season when you had first reported that the Leafs lowballed him, the reason why they lowballed him is because he had no track record, and they went, hey, do you really want to risk it with your injury history? And guess what? He did get hurt, and then his play did drop off, and then he leveled out at the end of the year. So, like, there was some merit to it. Here's where I think the question gets more interesting. It's not about between the two of those guys in those two terms. Is what could the Leafs have done had Dubas played this card a little bit better in two ways? One, had he actually maintained a bit of discourse with Jack and not lowballed him to the point of insult, which is, I think, the way you put it, and then had that relationship get sour? Because two, I think that played into Ottawa's leverage when they got to the table with Toronto. They knew Toronto didn't have a backup plan. They knew they didn't have a secondary move. They went, okay, so if you don't get Matt Murray, what are you going to do? You're going to go to free agency tomorrow, and you're going to try to get what? What are you going to do there? You're going to get Samsonov? You're going to overpay him? Because there's not a lot of goaltenders on the market, and you're already out on Jack Campbell because of the way that you position yourself. Like, I think that this was more of a you telegraphed your move, and you telegraphed it, and you might have been able to have Jack on a shorter, cheaper deal, whatever, had you been like a little bit more open in the dialogue. It's hard for me to comment on that one, but I think Ottawa knew the position they were in, and that's why Dorion basically stuffed Dubas in a locker and said, no, we're only eating 25% of this, and we're only giving you a third when you're taking one of the worst contracts in hockey.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure about the stuffing in a locker here. I asked a question to Justin on our show yesterday. Like, who's more desperate, Ottawa or Toronto? Because Ottawa made it abundantly clear they wanted him out. DJ Smith did not want Matt Murray back. So how many takers were out there? We know there was only maybe one taker for Peter Mrazek, and Kyle found him in Chicago. But there was only one for Matt Murray. And I don't think anybody else would have touched him, and not to that degree. So they were a perfect match for each other. You mentioned that Jack's history of being injured. You wouldn't take that one more than Matt Murray's track record of being injured. Like, it's tough here. And you mentioned the draft picks on Matt Murray. And again, I'm sitting there going, Kyle Dubas has to win, and he's got to do it this year. Those picks won't matter if Matt Murray does not turn out. His job is on the line here. So, It is a high risk gamble that he finds his game, but this was the best of a bad situation. And again, when you break it down, and people are starting to wonder now, you know, the comparisons of, okay, Jack gets $5 million today from the Edmonton Oilers, and you're paying $4.7 million, like it's $300,000 difference, and mm-hmm. It's like, okay, this is. The Leafs' decision on Jack was not based on the fact that they can save $300,000. That's nothing. Mm-hmm. Still, even with the pressure of the salary cap on the Leafs, that's nothing. They soured on him. They didn't want him. They had issues with him for whatever reason. And this was not a money decision. This was the fact that they lost tremendous confidence in Jack Campbell in the back half of the season, to the point where they wouldn't even offer him one contract, one legitimate offer. Mm-hmm. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, and that's why I'm surprised a little bit that, like, to me, that's why I'm like, you got stuff in the lockers, because I'm guessing that the negotiation came down to what the salary retention was going to look like for Matt Murray, because there was only one place to dump him. And there was only one team that wanted him, and the Toronto Maple Leafs needed cap space desperately. Like, I don't think that it is a good look that you're paying Matt Murray what's going to equate to essentially the same amount of money as Jack Campbell. It's interesting, though, what you just said about souring on him, because I'd always interpreted that as just the Leafs didn't want to pay Jack Campbell term because they didn't want to go into, you know, uncharted territory with that. But it sounds like you think it's more than that.
100%. Yes, and they had issues with Jack, and to what degree, I'm not sure. On ice, off ice, injuries, not mentally strong enough. Whatever the case is, this wasn't just strictly about term and an AAV. This was the decision that we can't win with Jack. We got a better chance to win with a guy that's done it twice than Jack moving forward. It will be fun to watch those early months next season.
Yeah, I'm kind of in your buddy Sam McKee's camp, that I'm trying to buy into this move, like, to a certain degree. Like I said it yesterday, I don't mind where they ended up given the goaltending market. What I mind is the process that took them there. That took them to a position where, in their final 2 years of Austin Matthews, they've got 2 years of Matt Murray coming off of his last 3 years, where I think I saw something like, out of the qualified goaltenders that played as many minutes as him, he was 56th in save percentage out of like 64 guys in that time, and who's coming off of multiple injuries. Like, yeah, you're right. It's a huge gamble. It's a huge dice roll. We all understand the stakes of this. They're massive. Ailish and I were talking earlier, though, today, and again, I mentioned how, like, yeah, the Leafs don't appear to be in on any like overly sexy names because they're not a team with a ton of cap space. And this is a time where, you know, cap is king and the teams that have it, they're the ones who get to be the ones that kind of set the market here. Obviously, Toronto is going to have to be a little bit in wait and see mode. But I thought that at the end of last year, we all kind of agreed like one of the things Toronto absolutely needed to change was the look of their bottom six and the style in which they played. And now again, like I'm looking at the landscape and it what do you expect today or over the next couple of days when it comes to this team's approach to that group specifically?
Well, I think that's where Brendan Shanahan looks at Kyle Dubas and says, "Hey, spin your magic. Go find me another Bunting. Go find me something that would cost in the vicinity of $1.5 million. And I think they kind of went the way of skill isn't quite working. We got to get some toughness. Kyle Clifford came back. They gave him an extension that probably would look more like Marley's until we really, really need you. Nick Delorier is a name out there that people feel that can play a tough role and skate and do some good things out there. I would think he would be in play for the Leafs. But those are the type of moves that you're looking at. Believe it or not, as far as the Toronto Maple Leafs are concerned, they are now on the clock to re-up Austin Matthews in 2 years. The build is around making sure he doesn't pull what Johnny Hockey pulled on Calgary in the last 24 hours. And it's got to be geared towards Austin Matthews, and you got to get on it now. You don't let that happen to your organization. The Leafs, 4 years ago, were on the plus side of the Islander fans getting the rug pulled out from underneath their feet. So they've seen both sides on how this works. But under no circumstances can this organization afford to lose Austin Matthews. The work, I'm told, has already started, but it will get a lot stronger here in the coming months.
We talked about that off the top of the show, like the Johnny Gaudreau idea that superstars can leave, whether you hand them a bag of money or not. What do you think of what's going on right now in Calgary? Like how that feels, but looking at the roster shakeup, like Tkachuk is still kind of a question mark and what they might be doing to try to compensate the fact that you just lost one of your all-stars.
Yeah, just business. That's all. And I know Calgary fans are sour and the Islander fans were sour. And, you know, 98% of the time it's the player that's getting told by the club, you know, we're kicking you to the curb or we have no more use for you and you're done. And it's very rare that teams can or players can kind of reverse that role and leave clubs hanging out to dry a little bit, which Johnny did, you know, not to blame him or anything like that, but that's the leverage that true stars have, and not many players in the league have it. And it is a bit of a role reversal what clubs are accustomed to having all the control. So in saying that, Calgary couldn't read the tea leaves early, or else I'm sure in hindsight you would have traded him, you would have moved him, you would have tried to get something for him. But there's big damage by allowing him to walk out the door and get nothing in return, and then it's the ripple effect. You know, was Johnny Hockey leaving all along, or was he waiting to see what Matthew Tkachuk was going to do? Was there a thought that he wanted to see if he was interested in re-upping? But that's the next move now, is Matthew Tkachuk a year away from maybe doing the same thing, and all of a sudden Calgary is really behind the eight ball with two of their major stars gone.
Okay, but don't they need to know that right now? Because that's the the question with Calgary now. That's what makes them fascinating is, okay, you just lost Johnny Hockey for nothing. He's walking out the door. They already said it was, you know, non-money related, that they were things that they just couldn't offer this guy. And now, like, you know what sucks about this the most is you're a Flames fan. You're looking at this a year ago. You know, you finished with, what, 111 points. You're at the top of your division. You felt like you'd kind of figured out your goaltending piece, that your team was complete, that people had you as one of the best teams in hockey. And then all of a sudden, McDavid spanks you, pulls your pants down, spanks your entire team, embarrasses your entire team, and then Johnny Hockey leaves, and now you got fans probably wondering, like, boy, I wish we stunk last year. I wish last season was bad so that we would have been at the deadline maybe shopping Johnny Gaudreau. I don't know how you can let Tkachuk leave for free. Like, you obviously can't. And so where does that leave them with this? It feels like either they've got to know what he's doing so that they can load up and sign somebody else, or do you think that there's, like, a potential of them, like, all of a sudden going into, like, a completely different sale mode?
Yes. Yeah, I do see that, Ed. I would think that they would have learned off of Johnny Hockey, and they're going to revisit the Matthew Tkachuk and try to explain to him, we can't have you do the same thing to us and our fans. So you got to let us know a lot earlier, or else we will move you. We will shop you. And that's really why we've heard probably in the last week or two some rumors or speculation that they could possibly be asking other clubs questions on Matthew Tkachuk, because they cannot afford to lose him for nothing. And the theme now around Calgary and Brad Treliving is that this wasn't a money thing. This was family, the possibility of being closer. Well, where's Matthew Tkachuk? Where's his family? Where's his loyalty as a kid growing up to St. Louis Blues? And it's not hard to connect the dots. If this guy does not re-up on a long-term deal soon, which he is now eligible for, then people are going to connect the dots on him wanting to go home and play for the St. Louis Blues.
Oof, not the best times in Calgary. Okay, so if it's not Johnny Gaudreau, if it's not the Calgary Flames, who do you care about today? Who are you watching closely today?
Well, I think by 3:30, I got to get a cracked tooth pulled, so my dentist right now. other than that, I think, I mean, Malkin re-ups in Pittsburgh, so yep. that blind loyalty continues. For Pittsburgh, Kadri, will that get done today? I think the goaltending carousel, we all believe that much like last season with Zach Hyman and the Edmonton connection, well in advance of free agency, we get the same feel for Jack Campbell, and that leaves Darcy Kemper probably in Washington. And everybody's speculating that he wants $6 million. I'll be shocked if he gets 5.5. So I think Washington can get a decent number on a guy that just won a Stanley Cup if they choose.
Kipper, you before you go, you do have to say the Kadri thing, though. You're the Kadri guy. Where do you think Kadri's going?
Well, the one team that I think is really aggressive, and I think you mentioned Jeff Merrick saying something about Seattle being in on Klingberg, but I think the home run is if they end up with Kadri and Klingberg. They're really aggressive today. I don't know if Kadri wants to go there. That's a different kettle of fish here. But Seattle's going to try really, really hard. We believe that. I thought maybe Boston, but the talk is about Krejci going back there. But there'll be a few takers here, and I don't rule out Calgary spending some of that money that they've just saved on Gaudreau to take a run at Kadri as well.
Buddy, be careful with your cracked tooth, okay? 3:30 today, yeah. Like that dentist, like let that dentist know that, you know, this is your moneymaker now, you know? Like this is how you make a living. Like no mistakes, all right? Like no mistakes, dentist. Just keep it clean, just get in and get out. Like let's get this sucker done.
Oh my God, just yank the thing as fast as you can. The thing is driving me nuts.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, ooh, good luck with that.
Don't
today.
Tweet any Thanks. Fake news out when you're on morphine, all right?
Yeah, like, don't. Nobody.
Phone down for a bit.
Yeah, nobody trick Kipper sending him all these texts of like breaking news. It's like, no, nobody do that while you're on morphine.
Crosby, yes.
Ailish and JD for Howard Stern.
Oh, yeah. What a trade.
A blockbuster.
Oh, yes. We get to say whatever we want. Yes. Huge win for JD and Ailish.
You already do that.
We do. Yeah, kind of. Pretty close. Nick Kiprios, can't wait to listen to the show today. Again, it should be a fun one. Real Kipper and Bourne later today. See you, Kipper. Thanks, pal.
Have a great day.
Cheers, buddy. And with that, it's now time for Something to Chew On, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
What do you got?
A little bit of breaking news. Well, potential breaking news. Pierre LeBrun tweeted that all signs point to the Ottawa Senators being the front runners to land unrestricted free agent Claude Giroux when the market opens today. Ottawa Senators going all in, looking like a playoff team. Stewie will be happy about that. But yeah, they're not messing around right now.
Sens have been incredible. Grabbing Talbot for essentially like upgrading your goaltending situation without passing on anything that you really feel like is going to come back to haunt you. Like, you already have your 1A guy of the future, and now you have a guy who, you know, arguably was the goaltender that everybody else wanted. The other part of that, too, the Talbot deal that I like for Ottawa is they could absolutely flip him to a team that gets desperate for goaltending later in the year and get real assets for him if he bounces back in any kind of way. Like, it's still Cam Talbot. I was shocked that that was the price given the goaltending market that they were able to pull that move off. Obviously, Dorion won the Kyle Dubas negotiations for reasons that we've outlined. Like, he needed to dump that contract so he could go get Giroux, and he needed cap space as well. And so did Dubas. And all he got was a third-round pick for 25% salary retention. I'm sorry. That's a win for Ottawa. I don't know how you could be looking at that as a Leafs fan saying, wow, what a great win, getting the completely distressed asset, wild card, lottery ticket, dice roll, who no one else wanted in the NHL, who had a no-trade clause, for only 25% off for a third? No. Like, you can be into the Murray move, but you can't say that Toronto won the negotiation. Then they steal DeBrincat. As a result of, it reminded me actually a little bit of the Lowry thing where the Knicks, like everyone's like, Masai, he's a goat. He knew Lowry. He's like, he tried to trade Lowry, but the Knicks screwed it up. It's like, that kind of feels like how they fell into DeBrincat a little bit. Like you almost made a mistake by moving that pick down just to get off the contract, and it all worked out great for you. Like, everything else is a byproduct of the move that wouldn't get done from one party that was outside of your decision-making prowess. And now you get Claude Giroux. I'm guessing they're going to overpay for him and that it's not going to be a contract anybody loves, but that's the deal with free agency right now, right? Is not only do you not love paying older guys. No one does. Like, this is the easiest take that anybody can have in sports, which is they go, this contract isn't going to age well. Great. Like, they never do. So, sure, we can bring it up, but it's, like I said, it's basic. And every team knows it. They're not like, the Ottawa Senators aren't sitting here, and we said it about Malkin even earlier. It's like the Pittsburgh Penguins aren't going there going, yeah, no, we figure Malkin's going to be worth $6 million when he's 39 years old. Like, obviously not. All these teams are aware of this. But I think Giroux represents something for Ottawa. One is that how many times do unrestricted free agents really want to sign there? Like, how often has Ottawa been the apple of a city's eye? Not too frequently. Claude Giroux is still like a nasty player who brings you're the leadership leader on this show, okay? You love the leader, all right? That's your thing. You love leadership. And this guy has that in spades. That is what this dude is. And you're talking about someone that you can just drop into the middle of a young team that actually still has some gas left in the tank for the next couple of years. I think it's a home run. Barring on what some of the numbers are here, right? Like, there is a number that makes me go, oof, this is a bit too much. But to bring in DeBrincat and to bring in Claude Giroux in the same offseason to grab Cam Talbot, Ottawa, like, just...
You check the betting odds on them to...
Ottawa's just doing sexy things. Again, if you had Ottawa stock like I did, like say it a couple of weeks ago, you know, once the stadium thing got announced, there's a real buzz around that team right now. There's a real buzz. And I know that we tend to over-celebrate the off-season winner team a lot, but I think it's pretty damn special that Ottawa hasn't had to reach into like their prospect pile much. Just
plus $6,600 to win the Stanley Cup. Just $5.
I don't think they're going to win the cup this year, but this is the
never know, JD.
Sens fans have to be feeling good. This is an organization that just like a couple of years ago had all those picks and was hoping to get to the top of the draft and didn't, and their fan base was all choked, and they thought, boy, we can't catch a break. We've got the worst owner. This is we're not too long ago from Pierre Dorion saying, we're a team, on television, sweating profusely, and everyone laughing at that. And now all of a sudden, this dude's like just pulling off move after move. New ownership, new stadium potentially, new stars coming in, tons of prospects. Love what the Senators are doing. I don't know how you couldn't. And yeah, I like. There's not even a zag here where you can start to go like, oh yeah, well, but what about this? No, they're just doing great. Anyway, love the Sens. And yeah, don't really know.
Ontario's team.
Well, the cool thing about it is that, yeah, next season the Battle of Alberta is fully back with Matt Murray being in net. And knowing
you, mean
you have
Ontario.
What'd I say?
Alberta, but oops. Yeah. Same thing.
Yeah.
Lots of battles.
No, the Battle of Alberta's done. The Oilers that was Carthage. Like they salted the earth. Like it's done. Like it's over. Calgary's over. It doesn't matter what happens next year. But no, the Battle of Ontario is back because now there's stakes with Matt Murray. There's stakes between these two GMs. There's stakes obviously between the coaching staffs, right? DJ Smith being there. There's stakes in terms of some gritty players in Ottawa that are going to mix it up with Toronto. Like now, again, the Claude Giroux, the Kachucks of the world. And yeah, they Ottawa's on the come up. And I think Toronto people view as on the, well, what is going to happen here despite like that real playoff success last season? So yeah, Battle of Ontario back. Maybe that's something to chew on. That's what's back. Chewing on more, caring about the Senators again and caring about these games between them and the Maple Leafs beyond just don't choke it, Leafs. You need to win this, Leafs. Anyway, let's take a break. Are we supposed to be concerned with Vladdy? And will the next couple of weeks actually have significant bearing on how the Blue Jays approach the deadline? Is this a front office that feels as though they are under any kind of pressure? Someone who's measured and someone who knows. Stephen Brunt, next on the Fan Morning Show with JD and Ailish. Sports at 590, The Fan.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Morning show. It's time to break up JD and Ailish. Our voices, our takes, and ask somebody who actually knows things and who is measured. Stephen Brunt, co-host of Fan Drive Time. How you doing right now? You're kind of in vacation mode, kind of working mode. Like I always wonder. It's like what are we doing? You're watching the full games. You're Jays and 30 guy. How we doing?
No, as long as they're not playing in Seattle. When they're playing on the West Coast, if you add that to the time difference to where I am, it's a little tricky. So that's the old PBR, Jays and 30. But as long as they're in the Eastern time zone, I'm fine. I can stay up a little bit late.
Yeah, I got a secret for you. Nobody's watching those Mariners games other than the people of Vancouver. It's like, hey, let us know how this went. And then they reported back. They were like, bad, dudes, bad. We went, oh. So they come back there. It was weird. Yesterday, like, I hate doing this with baseball, But yesterday felt very must-win-ish, and I was very pleased, right? Like, they get length from Barrios. He's awesome. We started the show today talking about Gurriel and how his season's actually been pretty underappreciated for a guy that gets called streaky all the time. Mm-hmm. Putting a month and a half together of hitting almost 400 is pretty damn impressive and pretty under-discussed. But I have to start with this, Steven, because it was the conversation that I was having with people that were down at the ballpark, and it was the conversation that I was having with my friends, and it was the focus of the broadcast last night. Like, Vlad looked mopey. Like, he did not look... He had a big-time pout face going on last night. And given the parameters of kind of where this team is at, and given the fact that I think he's 11th in WAR right now at his position, where is your level of just like, or where are you at just today? I know this is kind of a vague question, but where are you today with the year Vlad's having?
Well, it's obviously not last year. Like, let's mm-hmm. start with that. It's more like what we saw before that, but he's, you know, the very early Vlad, you could look at it and say, well, he's one of the youngest players in the major leagues and arrived with huge expectations and didn't turn into, Mike Trout overnight. So then, but then last year kind of answered every question, right? Said, that's the guy. There you go. And he's everything everybody imagined him to be. And this year is... Yeah, I think I'm seeing the combination of, as you say, like on many levels, he's having a really good year. If you just got it, but it doesn't feel like he's having a really good year or a great year. It certainly doesn't feel like he's having a great year. And I think it's the stretches where there are some non-competitive at bats. The first three at bats last night, those first three straight, they weren't just strikeouts. They were, he wasn't competitive. And the body language and the expression, people may be reading too much into it. I think he's an emotional guy. I also think he's a kid in a lot of ways still. I don't think he's kind of got the grizzled veteran face going. He's not, you got to take the long view face in baseball that I think when stuff goes wrong, you see it with him. There's times I kind of wonder about, I think there's times when he seems kind of impulsive as a ball player, which is weird because, everything we've heard about him coming up was that his plate discipline and, his kind of baseball IQ as a hitter especially was just off the charts, that he wasn't just a swing and hope guy, that he broke stuff down and we talk about that. The guys on TV talk about that during at-bats. Okay, Vlad just saw that. You saw him nodding. He knows what the guy's trying to do to him, and now he's going to counter that. I've just seen a lot of at-bats this year where it didn't feel like that, where it just felt like kind of grip and swing and hope. Maybe the real story is that he could do that and still have the numbers that he has. He's sometimes concentration issues. I like that mistake in the field last night. That's, it's inexcusable. You can't not touch the bag. It's just, that's pretty straightforward. And it cost him a couple. But, extra outs, I think we saw that in Seattle. Extra outs are a bad thing.
Yeah, they really are. And I thought that moment was like the at-bats not being competitive was one thing, but sometimes the lack of attention to detail and some of these things, like, I'm with you, like, but I also don't love doing the whole, like, he's 23 thing, because his 23 is not our 23. Like, well, actually, I don't know, maybe it was closer to yours because, you were actually, like, talented and I think worked harder. But when I was 23 years old, I was just coming out of college. Sure, I wasn't 4 years into my professional career. And I do try to measure things where I'm like, okay, so if we all said Vladdy grew up around the game and that this was going to help him, and then all of a sudden he gets to the major leagues and he's struggling at 23 and we're going, oh, he's just a kid. I don't really like the way that sometimes we seem to kind of like go back and forth in terms of the way that we frame this guy, especially since he got major league money when he was like 16 years old, 15 years old. Like, it was like a Brazilian soccer club. He got the treatment of, things that you only see in like Barcelona. And they did that for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. It feels like he's been a professional longer. And so some of the lack of professionalism things, I guess I do have a little bit of a harder time with, and I don't view him as the same 23 as like even a guy like Alejandro Kirk, who is I think a little bit younger than him but came up later than he did. So I think that it's tough because he is having a good season, right? Like, I think his OPS is 825 and he's had some really still incredible stretches this year, and you still do see some of you see the flashes, but the premise of the Blue Jays is not like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a really good baseball player. It's that he's one of the best players in all of baseball.
Yeah, That's right. That's the standard by which we measure him. And he's, you know, he's playing in the All-Star game. He's starting the All-Star game, although that's, you know, in large part a popularity contest. But, you know, I got no problem with him starting at first base. I think he deserves to be for the American League. But we do measure him with, what's the bar we use? Well, you know, he's the guy who finished behind Shohei Ohtani having a season like no other season in baseball history for the MVP. Otherwise, he's the MVP last year. And so not being a really, really good ball player, but a kind of historically great ball player is what we're looking for. And I know what you mean about, he has been effectively a professional since he was 16. He's lived in the game. Like, I don't think there's a moment in Vlady Guerrero Jr.'s life when he was anything other than a baseball player. I'm not sure. Like, when do you think was the last year he went to school?
Oof.
Like, just for something other than baseball. Like, it's an interesting, like, I have no idea. I'm just throwing that out there. But
it has to literally be, like, do you think that there was... Mm-hmm.
Maybe? Yeah?
Yeah. Maybe, so I know. Yeah, that's been, right.
I don't know. It's the Dominican, things are different down there, right? But, yeah, I don't know. But every moment of this guy's life has been about him being a baseball player. And here he is. And, you know, yet last year was kind of wish fulfillment stuff. And, you know, before that, the home run derby, and that you kind of put him on the map for a lot of people. And people still, you know, if you asked a casual baseball fan anywhere in North America to name one Toronto Blue Jay, he's the guy they'd name. Mm-hmm. He'd be one of the guys in baseball they'd name. So he's kind of already kind of a cartoon character in baseball. And yet the reality of playing baseball over a 162-game season against guys who are really good and sometimes it not working out and maybe them exploiting your bad days. Like, it's, you know, I'm not saying anything about work ethic or anything, because I think he does work incredibly hard at the game. But I think the flip side of that is in some ways the game came easy to him. You know, he dominated everywhere, always, in every, from the time he was, 12. What happens, and then you arrive last year and it all comes together, and then what happens if it's not quite so simple the year after? And, you know, not just for him, but for the team. Mm-hmm. Right? This is last year was not a simple year, but here's the flip side of that, JD. You know, we spend a lot of time talking about, you know, and this is partially from watching television, you know, everybody, they all love baseball and they all love each other and look at the hijinks in the dugout. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? A bunch of, you know, young guys having fun playing a game. If you can't have fun over 162, like, it's going to be pretty dreary. So we read a lot into that. But, you know, when a team starts to struggle and stuff goes wrong, you know, all that stuff's not, it's not so much fun. Like, it isn't. And so now the frowny, same with Bo not, you know, looking a little, you know, grouchy.
Yep.
Now we're kind of going, oh, wait a second. Those are the fun-loving dudes. They all love each other. And now they don't seem to love each other quite as much, and they're not having as much fun. Well, guess what? You know, that's the job part of it. And I think part of what we're seeing is just, you know, a team that thinks, a bunch of guys who think they're better than their record and that think they should be, you know, chasing the Yankees. And right now, especially during this stretch, they've played a lot of bad baseball and they've scuffled. And sometimes it's the fault of, you know, you look in the mirror and sometimes it's the pitching and sometimes it's something else. And, you know, that's naturally going to play on guys emotionally, as you know, as well as, you know, in terms of, you know, how they approach plate appearances or how they play in the field.
So how much of this, everything you just laid out, is going to add some pressure to the front office? I mean, we've talked about pressure for maybe Charlie Montoyo's job, but what do you think that they're feeling right now with the way the Jays have been over the last recent stretch?
Well, I think they're thinking the same thing they probably thought, you know, a while ago, which is, we got to add a couple of arms. And you know, with Ryu going down and Kikuchi being whatever, we need a depth starter. We need at least a depth starter. So, but the market hasn't really happened yet in baseball. It's not like anybody else is making deals of any consequence, which is because, you know, there are a bunch of contending teams and fringe contending teams, and there are not that many absolute sellers. And even teams that are sellers are kind of wondering, you know, do you want to give up years of control? Are you just selling guys who are going to be free agents? I'm sure that it's not like this, you know, this isn't the end of the line for this group. It's different than 2015, 2016, where you could kind of look at the clock and say, this isn't going to last very long. This could last quite some time, but yeah, I'm sure there's a sense of urgency. I think they expected to contend this year. They definitely 100% expect to be a postseason team this year. So yeah, the job's pretty clear, right? Go out, bullpen arms you can get. You know, they might not be, they might not be this year's flavor in terms of the best guy this year and who's available, but the equivalent of Simber and Richards and or a Jimmy Garcia, you know, more so a little more swing and miss, a little more velocity, and a depth starter. I think at this point, the kind of getting the left-handed hitter thing may be, you know, that'd be a cherry on top, but I'm not sure that's going to happen.
Yeah, I think that when you take this entire picture into account, though, right, and this is what I find interesting about starting with the Vladdy conversation, is like, if you're the front office right now and you're taking a big picture step back, you're going, listen, we're still very much in it, and the things that we need that you just outlined are not that big of a deal, and of course that those things could end up working out, and you get, like, again, you add anything to this bullpen, it's much better than what you have. Like, if I never see the Pirates, you know, castaways again in Anthony Banda opening up baseball games. I think that's a good start. You know, like, that's a good start. A depth starter doesn't seem to be the toughest thing to acquire. But ultimately, like, I'm looking at this as a lot of your prospects have not maintained their value. Like, I don't know what Jordan Groshans is worth today. I know that Aurelvis Martinez has had, like, a bit of a polarizing year. You're obviously not moving off of Gabriel Moreno. Like, but beyond that, I don't have much knowledge of the Jays farm system, but it certainly doesn't feel as though it's as deep as it once was. And of course it's not, because they've made moves like for Chapman and for Berríos, where they've pulled from that asset pile. So it doesn't feel like they just have, you know, infinite prospects the way that they did before. There might be maturity questions among their young leadership core. They are underperforming. I don't think that I don't know, maybe you could tell me I'm wrong, but it doesn't feel like they know that they have their manager of the future right now. And all of a sudden, they're in a year where they're going to have to overpay for whatever they end up bringing in here because of the depth of field right now, where you even have the Orioles that are in the mix. I think the Mariners are going to be desperate come deadline time. There's not a lot of sellers. There's probably going to be a lot of buyers. It'll absolutely be a seller's market. I don't know. I don't think that there should be standing pat, but yeah, do you think that there's going to be anything that could materially change what their approach is going to be over the next week or so outside of, like, yeah, some offer comes up that they just can't refuse that they weren't expecting?
Well, I think they would be, well, again, the market's going to determine it, to be honest, but I think if they could deal for pitching with extra years of control in the way they did with Berríos, I could see them being very aggressive in that, because it's not just this, you know, and, you know, obviously Ryu's done, and the big question mark around Kikuchi. You know, you're feeling pretty good right now about Manoah and Gausman, and really Berríos, because, you know, like, I know he's wobbled this year, but if you look at his, you know, he's a very consistent guy. You're feeling pretty good about those guys as your top three, and you're feeling pretty good about Ross Stripling, actually, as a guy who, you know, if he's the back end of your rotation, he's pretty good. But if you could get, you know, a couple guys in Cincinnati are kind of interesting. You know, there's a couple guys in Miami that are really interesting. If you could get a guy that you had 2 years of control with, who you could maybe then try and charm into an extension the way you did with Berríos, prospect-wise, yeah, I don't know about, well, I have no idea what people think of Groshans at this stage. Mm-hmm. Martinez is a guy, though, people are still going to be interested. You've got some really interesting pitching coming, high A, double A now. And the guys you traded away, you know, you haven't really, I don't think anybody feels horrible about trading away Austin Martin at this point, or Kevin Smith, or, you know.
They just don't have them.
No, because they've graduated a bunch of guys too, right? Yeah. That's the other thing. And we've got to look at Gabriel Moreno right now already, and he kind of looks like what you hoped he'd be. He's not ready to be a number one tomorrow, but I didn't see anything with him as a Blue Jay which told me, boy, this guy's going to bust. You know, the opposite, I think. So, yeah, they have some cards to play. But I think the aggressiveness is going to depend on, you know, not so much where they are in the standings, but kind of what the market determines. You don't want to do something to improve your team. You have to do something. You know, and that's not just you also have to kind of do that for the guys on the field. But you don't want to, it's not an all or nothing year. I know people don't want to hear that, but it's not. You don't want to really kill next year or the year after that or the year after that for the chance to, you know, to, like again, I think you still look at this team and say, this is a postseason team. And if we make it a bit better, we get into a short series against anybody, we got a shot. But I don't think, so somewhere short of selling the farm.
Mm-hmm. But that's where I'm at with it too. And I guess that's why I was trying to paint that picture, is that it feels like to me, is there a scenario where the Jays could still win a World Series this year? Yes, absolutely. We just said, like, they've got three starting pitchers that I think can stack up just as well with anybody. And I also feel comfortable with Stripling pitching a fourth game. If the right deal comes around, like you just mentioned, sure, make that move. If you feel like there is a long-term prospect for someone, or that you're doing the team building thing. But yeah, I look at this entire thing in concert and I go, I never felt this was an all-in year. I did feel like there was real pressure to make the playoffs, and that there would be like consequences for not making the playoffs this year, and that there would be evaluations on all fronts if they didn't. But yeah, I think that it's tough because you have a fan base that looked at this year as their World Series contenders. You had your franchise player saying, you know, this is the movie, not the trailer anymore. And that, you know, the slogan of the team is next level. And so I think it's kind of hard to kind of recalibrate people's expectations. And I'm really not trying to be a homer here or an apologist here. I just look at this and say, I don't know why we had to determine this as the level up year when, you know, there still is some runway here for this team to reach the potential that I think a lot of us think that they have.
Yeah, well, there is, which is great. You know, it's good news. Again, what Mark Shapiro said the day he arrived was that, you don't want to build towards kind of, you know, one shot and then boom, and then you got to blow it up. You're trying to build towards something that's sustainable so that you're a contender year in and year out. And that, you know, that's a combination of, you know, especially having a good farm system, you know, and good drafts and good international signings and being smart on that front. And, you know, every once in a while getting, you know, having an Alejandro Kirk situation where something completely unexpected works out for you, and having payroll. So, you know, convincing ownership to spend, which they've done. And making some pretty significant free agent signings. But you know, you want to keep this thing, the machine rolling, and that's the goal. So it's not ever going to be all about one season, but I think the expectations going in, like, they're legit, right? Like, there was every reason to have those expectations. There's still every reason to believe this is a playoff team. You know, if it isn't, something's gone really haywire. And I think that'll be a tough moment. And, yeah, there probably will be some reevaluation. So I think the expectations are legit, but it's not like in no way am I saying, hey, it's not just the wait till next year. And I even with the Yankees running away with the division, like, you know, JD, you are aware of, you know, what this, you know, the Seattle Mariners, the 116 win Seattle Mariners, how that went. You can beat anybody in a short series. So yeah, they're awesome. You know, they're awesome. Yeah, they lost to the Cincinnati.
I don't like that you reminded me of that. I don't like that you reminded me of that. That was a real traumatic childhood memory for me. Like, that's like top five. That's in my pantheon of, like, I can't believe this thing is happening to me in my, like, childhood. which means I had a good childhood, but also it sucked.
Well, I've heard people say, well, the Yankees are going to win it all. Let's just concede. You know, no, that's not how, like, yes, the regular season, probably no one's going to catch him. Mm-hmm. But the postseason's different. Look it up. You can look it up. So, yeah, it's a year when you expect to win, or you expect to contend, you expect to be in the playoffs, but it's not now or nothing. Mm-hmm. So this is, you got to trust your front office to be smart here. And I think what they've been, you know, they may have overreached on the Kikuchi thing. We'll see. Just maybe. But, you know, they've been pretty smart. Yeah, they've been pretty smart so far. So let's see what they come up with in the next couple of weeks.
Stephen Brunt, as always, thanks so much for your time.
All right. Good talking to you guys.
Take care, man. I think you said a lot of good things there. Quickly, I just wanted, before we hit this break, because I want to leave as much time for Elliot as possible, so I want to break on time. But putting all the pieces together, it really does seem like the Blue Jays' top priority is still pitching. And if you read in between the lines of what Morosi said in terms of the class of pitcher that the Jays could be interested in, reading Blair's column yesterday, talking just now to Stephen Brunt, that this is a baseball team that is primarily interested in only dealing from the real asset pile if it is for starting pitchers that they can bring back for the next season. And to me, that is also tipping their hand as to, it seems like they're putting Kikuchi already into the pile that Ryu was in coming into this season, which is, yeah, maybe we get something, but maybe we don't, and it's a sunk cost already, and we already know that this is a distressed asset, and we're not putting our eggs into the "this guy has to come back" basket. Again, I'm not apologizing for this team. They were supposed to be World Series contenders, and right now they don't look that way. And I think that's going to develop into hard questions if it continues to go this route. But I just, I'm looking at this now with the Yankees having run away with the division, your prospect pool not being overly deep in this very moment, you having multiple holes in your pitching, you having a regression season from a couple of your young stars, and a deep, deep competitive pool when it comes to who you are battling with in the standings. And all I can think to myself is, boy, maybe you have to be a little bit more patient here. So that's it. Some things are going to have to happen. There's going to have to be some accountability. But I do think that, yes, we need to stop looking at it as the level up or whatever the slogan was of the season. Let's take a break. Let's come back. What next for the Toronto Maple Leafs? The Insider, Elliot Friedman, next.